tomorrow a new issue of Discover Magazine hits newsstands, which means we have one of the magazine's editors here to give us a sneak peek at some of the coolest stories from the world of science this month.
Gemma Tarlak is a senior associate editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. Gemma, good to have you back.
Always great to be with you.
So this month you've got a feature looking at how security measures, things like fences on the Mexican-American border, are affecting the animal life there, animals like the pronghorn and jaguars. What are you finding? What's the link?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. It's such a hot topic now with all the concerns about illegal migration across the border, but no one's really talking about the fact that there are more than two dozen threatened or endangered species, including the pronghorn. As you mentioned, there's a pygmy owl, jaguars, other animals, that really they are getting just hemmed in. There is no place for them to go, and it's affecting their genetic diversity because of the fences, because of the highways, because of the increased grazing of cattle, and also just other elements of human development.
So the ecosystem for these animals doesn't obviously recognize the international border. So previous to these fences, they wandered back and forth as part of their natural deal, right?
Right, exactly. And that's what allowed genetic flow, you know, to make sure there was no inbreeding and that there was a healthy population. And, you know, one of the ironies is in the story, our writer goes along with members, a biologist and members of the Border Patrol, and they come to one of these 12-foot high walls that have been erected to keep people from crossing the border illegally. And the biologist says, you know, a person could get over that. An animal couldn't. And it's kind of this really sad irony. And these are pretty, you know, iconic animals of the American Southwest, whether you're talking about the pronghorn, the Sonoran pronghorn, which a lot of people misidentify as an antelope, but it's actually a different species, or, you know, the jaguar. There are all these animals that their populations are being disrupted, and as a result, they're not as healthy. Their numbers are shrinking, and it's really kind of tragic.
Is this primarily a story of genetic diversity and these fences stopping that from happening, or is it also about not available habitat for range and food?
Oh, absolutely. It's about that as well. And, you know, they talk about, we're all aware of that horrible drought we're having now in our western states, including that area. So, you know, they're already trying to survive the drought, trying to survive all these highways and other things, and now they've got drones in the air looking for people crossing the border illegally. You know, the trucks roaring up and down these desert areas, really disrupting them and stressing them out and making it even harder for them to survive. So it's definitely survival in terms of the individual animal finding sufficient food and water, but it's also survival of the population through healthy genetics.
Well, one thing I thought was really interesting was that scientists, the biologists here, are applying lessons from island biology to these, in effect, artificial islands that are being created by highways and borders.
Yeah, it's a theory called connectivity. And what they're looking to do is identify what they call safe corridors, ways that animals can move from one island, you know, from one isolated area to another. And they've gotten a lot of money, actually, from the Department of Homeland Security, which is trying to mitigate the damage being done. So they're getting money, and they're trying to apply it to find ways to identify these safe corridors and protect them to make it easier for the animals to get where they need to be and get the resources they need without compromising the border's integrity. It's a very tricky thing, but they're working on it.
Right. So right now you mentioned things like 12-foot fences. Are there alternatives to things like that that would be more animal friendly but still have the desired effect immigration-wise, illegal immigration-wise?
Yeah, I know. I think you'll find a lot of different opinions on that. I think, you know, the biologists would certainly argue that there are different ways, whether they're things like animal overpasses and underpasses through the highways, things, by the way, that have been used successfully in Canada, not on the border, but just in busy national parks with a lot of highways. The Canadians have found ways to create, you know, safety corridors, artificial corridors like overpasses and underpasses that allow animals to maintain their territory. So there's a lot of discussion about that, but, you know, there's always the concern that, hey, if an animal can get through, a person can get through, and, you know, a person's going to be motivated to get through. So there's a lot of debate and contention in that area. There are options. We're just not sure if they're going to really work.
Well, moving on to another story of interest to us here in the radio world, evidently how people talk, something about our voices can give a cue as to how tall we are. How does that work?
That is true, and you sound about 5'9 to me, am I right?
Whoa.
No, actually, 6'6".
5'9", dead on. Well done.
Wow. That was pretty impressive, Gemma.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I did meet you years ago, but anyway. These two experiments by Washington University psychologists. First, they had two people of the same sex but different heights read identical passages to people who couldn't see them, and people were able to say who was taller and who was shorter just by their voice. And they repeated, they had a different experiment where five people from the same sex read the same thing, and people had to rank them without seeing them by height, so ranking them solely by their voice but determining how tall they were. And they got that, too. They were able to tell, yeah, that guy's shorter than that guy. They think it all has to do with something called subglottal resonance, and that's actually really hard to say, subglottal resonance. Basically, taller people have larger lower airways, and it's in the lower airways that certain sounds are produced. And if you've got a larger lower airway, those sounds are able to reverberate and create a deeper pitch. So, you know, none of us are thinking about that, like, his subglottal resonance tells me. But on some, you know, subconscious level, we're very aware of that difference. And that enables us to say, yeah, that guy sounds tall. Ah, she sounds short, you know, whatever. So it's a really interesting find. And they think, you know, it might have actually some applicability in even criminal proceedings. If you have eyewitnesses, why not have ear witnesses?
Wow, that's really interesting. Could have all kinds of implications, I suppose. If you're thinking about dating and you talk to someone over the phone, does this voice make me look short? I don't know. It sounds like it's just the beginning of understanding how, you know, how we perceive height and what that means and how to tell.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know about you, but I do sometimes, you know, talk to someone on the phone and think, wow, that sounds like, you know, a really big guy or, you know, whatever. And I'm picking up subconsciously on that subglottal resonance.
That was the original proposed name for our show, by the way, subglottal resonance. I want to say that again and again.
Once you're able to say it, you just can't stop saying it.
Central Time just barely nudged it up. But maybe we should reconsider it in light of this research.
Yeah, definitely. Well, one more story now before you go. The story about the creator of Guitar Hero, right? The console game all the youth are playing, and older people too, I gather. But he's up to some interesting new stuff.
Yeah, he does a lot of different things. And he describes himself as more like the godfather of Guitar Hero. Apparently, he lit the flame of inspiration and then helped guide some other people to create it. But he's definitely in the founding fathers of Guitar Hero. And he is looking at all the different ways sound has a relation to our health, both in can listening to sound improve our health, and also by listening to the sounds we make, can we diagnose potential health problems?
How would that work?
Well, it's actually really fascinating. There's this thing called Parkinson's Voice Initiative, and he mentions it briefly in the interview. It's actually you are able, the researchers, if you talk into a phone and do phonations, which are basically kind of the ah vocal sounds, and you make a series of phonations, and researchers record that telephone call, run it through some software, they are able to say whether or not you have Parkinson's, and they're actually able to diagnose earlier than standard tests, which is pretty amazing when you think about it. And it has to do with the level of vocal impairment, something you or I might not pick up on talking to someone, but the algorithms in this software actually enable the researchers to identify specific vocal impairments in the voice just by making phonations, again, the ah kind of open sounds, that can help diagnose Parkinson's early. And that is just, I mean, think about that. That is fantastic.
And then briefly, there was also mention in that of using musical training to help post-stroke patients learn how to talk again.
Yeah. He talks about another researcher who actually developed a melodic intonation theory, which is a specific set of steps where you teach someone to speak rhythmically with some pitch variations. Someone who has lost the ability to speak, such as after having a stroke, is able to learn to speak again much more quickly than traditional methods by following this kind of music-based method. They're not really sure how it works yet, but I think it's a wonderful illustration of how music can really, you know, be a healing process in our lives.
Well, Gemma, thanks so much, as always, for being with us today.
Always fun. Thank you, guys.
That's Gemma Tarlak. She's senior associate editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. She joins us each month to discuss some of the most intriguing stories from the world of science.